of misdemeanor in a way to stumble over that when we're actually talking about environmental security today. It feels like I'm not really here, but I am here with Pranjali, and as I said, we are talking about the issues of environmental security and securitization and what that means in a general sense, but also what it means in relation to gender and how gender plays into the importance of how we actually secure environmental ideas and to bring in the issues that matter, right? That's one of the things that that you sort of highlighted as what it means to securitize the environment or securitize environmental issues to the people and the state or the government is really to bring in those ideas of why this should matter to us, right? In a campaign where our ears perk up and we go, "You're right, that does matter. We should support these things, and you know, we should have laws and policies in place to protect or support the protection of the environment as it stands." As I say that and it comes out of my mouth, I just think of how bloody challenging that is in relation to the man, the lobbyist, the industry, the corporate powers that really have so much clout in terms of what it means to just run over the environment and and not give it a wink, other than the fact that it you know, makes dollar bills roll in their eyeballs or whatever.
I like the visual cue there. I think, yeah, for sure. There's so much that it needs to be tackled in relation to when we talk about securitization and security. And I'm glad that it's making sense and you made really good classifications. It's really great. In terms of having the man in the positions of power in itself is interesting, because when they say that they're forming a policy or when they're securitizing, so it means that they have this sort of power to make decisions as they understand them, because those directly affect different parts of their state entities. So they can have, in effect, different sort of measures in place, which are understood in the form of external threat. So what does it even mean to have that sort of external threat term in the definition of securitization? What does it mean to have those terms like the human, as we were talking about before the strong break? Also, in terms of those who are on the policy-making table, so for example, a lot of the oil and fossil fuel companies are still at the table making suggestions that we should extract as long as it's available and continue and do this transition in a slow manner, in a just manner. And this just is like just hanging in there, and nobody really is doing or paying attention to the just transition's just factor. And this sort of transition is really happening at a very slow and power and money run rate. This is not necessarily happening as it should. And it partially comes from this idea of the power, which is in the hands mainly of the cis white-headed gender male. So these guys are in the room and in the positions of making those decisions, those policies. So it's not just those males who are necessarily avoiding listening to other sort of opinions or other sort of understandings. It is also because they're limited in their own perspective. That is where the biases comes into play. They don't live the lives that all of us do. So they don't necessarily know what's happening. But the cherry on the top is that they sometimes don't want to listen when we tell them. So they don't really want to listen to. So that's where it's really, really problematic. But bringing it back to environmental security in that sense, even the COP27, which happened last year, which is the UN's conference of parties, where different organizations, countries, nonprofits come together to meet. So that happened last year in November. And even in that conference, which is heavily and directly focused at doing this sort of transition and bringing those policies together in regards to climate change and the 1.5 degree Celsius threshold that we have to maintain as we move forward. These conferences were led by oil heads. So ExxonMobil was there. So all these companies were there, and those were the ones who were sort of dictating these panels that were happening, these conferences that were happening. So if those guys are still in the room, that's good, because those are the ones who are going to take out their money from that and put it into the more quote-unquote green areas. But they are not the ones who should be dictating these conversations. It should be given to the people who are actually experiencing these things. So, for example, I think I was talking about this idea of conflict and this idea of security in terms of resources. So gender not only plays into that, but it also plays into the form of the gender inequality that that happens when there has been an event of extreme weather. So when we are mitigating an effect, an after effect, it's really hard to have those lenses of the gender when we are dealing with the aftermath, because it's still really focused on having the human thing. So, for example, many of the resources include having food, water supply. But what about the menstruation supplies when we talk about these scenarios where you have to deal with the climate change effect, and then there is the aftermath of it? So displacement of the livelihoods, of the houses, of the sanitation capacities, and all those things. It's really different for each individual, but more so also on the gendered lines. So I think it's very important when looking at this sort of policy work and dictating these conversations to have that link placed very solidly in the room. Yeah.
It's interesting, and I appreciate you bringing up COP, because I think one of the last times maybe you and I were on the air together, we talked not necessarily about this topic particularly, but I do remember maybe doing a little bit of research about how many women were represented at COP, and how many women are represented at the table of those kinds of big organizations or those big international panels, right? Which isn't to say that, you know, people in female bodies can't make decisions that don't do justice to their gender as well. They certainly can, but the more diverse voices at the table, just in general, right, bring in the storied conversation that shifts the narrative from, you know, what might be considered the dominant narrative or the one that we've hinged our past, present, and future on so heavily that it's not working anymore. And, you know, it's not working anymore because we're starting to wake up more and more to the fact that there are other experiences and people living lives that are very different than policymakers' lives are. And even when, you know, organizations like COP have their own internal policy to increase the number of women at the table, they're still not hitting the mark, and they're still not making those inroads. And it's not to say that there aren't experts in the field, you know? What the shame and the reality is often is that some of those environmental activists who really have their feet on the ground and they know their issues are targeted, and some of them are murdered for the work that they're doing and for voicing dissent in terms of the ways that the current policies exist. And to really, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, to bring up what matters to a broader range of people, right? And so, you know, they're motivating more people on the ground, and that becomes dangerous. And so it's tricky, this idea of environmental security, or this idea of environmental securitization. It's also interesting to sort of harken back to the article, because the third stage is ecological security that the author outlines. And the major objective focus there is on ecosystems and, you know, not only the human life forms, but non-human life forms too. And that what we start to have to look at, right, are the negative impacts of human behavior on the environment. And that's a really hard thing to do. And it's really hard when there's so much world financing that is implicated and involved in that. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, follow the money, right? The money will lead you to what the world thinks is important, or, you know, to, you know, even if you track your own individual spending, right, you might become quite aware of what is important to you if you track your spending. It's no different. And it's a challenge because those things that are important become amplified. And in a pre-conversation that you and I had, Pranjali, about this, you know, I had mentioned the sort of campaign going around to search the Winnipeg landfill right now, because they had found a body just a few weeks ago, and the murdered and missing women and girls issue is crucial across Canada, but Manitoba, I think, is particularly hard hit in a lot of ways. And the government outright is stubbornly refusing to do that. And, you know, this is an example, right, of the pressure from the people to try to make what matters accessible to the powers that be, who actually have the wherewithal to do these things. But, you know, what we see as the reality is that these women and by sort of an expanded definition, the earth, the environment, the female qualities don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about policy and we're talking about this idea of securitization of the environment and you know, ecological protections and all of these things, we the people are the ones who know what it is that we need more than the politicians, right? But it's how to make them, how do we make them listen? How do we make them hear our cries?
Well, this needs a whole episode, I guess, of its own. But there's so much, because there's so many historical and cultural and social entanglements. I don't know if that's even a word, entanglements, but that's like a whole web of things happening in that arena. But I think the point that you put forward is that when we are talking or conversing or are in this idea of the consultation stages of the policymaking, we might be present at the table, but we might not be given the power and the space to actually demand those actions and present the ways in which we could change. And I think this understanding of this male-dominated policy establishments is also interesting to keep in mind, because even though we might be given the space, as I think, yeah, we were talking about that, this idea of gender playing a role in different conferences and the leadership role that the female is given in this environmental scape of things. I think that was our conversation back then. But what we could draw from the conversation was that even though we are giving the space to present, even though we might be present as the leaders, the way in the system how things work out actually is that still the ones who have the money power are essentially the ones who are being heard to, and the policies favor them in one way or the other, for sure. That's what's happening. Also, I think there is an important line that sometimes blurs out that might be worth mentioning here, is this stereotyping frame that is usually used in media to talk about women as being victims and as in protective and passive terms in the society. And I think that is not necessarily true in most cases. It does happen and still happens. I come from a background as well that I'm aware of, these things do happen. But victimizing them is not the correct way to go about them, and thinking them as to be just powerless, it's also not correct. Giving that space and allowing them to have these conversations and to be part of this policy making work also involves having representation in those powerful positions. And that really comes from the very root thing, which is, do you have enough food on your table? Do you have this capacity to send your daughters to school, and all these different things that act up when we go out and seek jobs for positions like these, for policymaking and all these things, who are the ones who are given preferential behavior, not necessarily because you're biased, but this cognitive dissonance and this idea that, the confirmation bias that, you know, scientists, male would be a better scientist, so let's hire that because he has X and Y Z education, and this female who has this education, but maybe she's a good candidate, so we'll see how that goes. This sort of thing really happens and can be traced back to really the bottom of the problem, which is also income inequality. There's gender inequality because power is distributed in such a bad way, I would say. I think definitely thinking about these policy making rooms and who has the voice actually to input in these conversations and bring those discussions to even talk about security, because inherently securitization gives the power in the hands of the governments to make the decisions for the people. That's the sort of idea that securitization carries with itself. So before that happens, it's also essential to talk about the people who are actually facing, we the people, as you said, to know what's happening and letting them take the sort of charge to decide the decisions. Because just giving them the charge that, oh, you just make the decisions, that's not possible even, because there are so many different intersections of the institutions that are already existing. But also in terms of having, when we give the charge to this sort of minority, quote unquote, it really gives away and it removes the responsibility from the male who are actually in these positions and who should have been taking care of these issues. So just taking away the responsibility that they have not completed and putting it all on these folks is not the correct way to go as well. Yeah. Did you have a song to play, or maybe...
I think we'll play this song out for the end, because we are coming close to the top of the hour, which is always amazing how fast time goes, and how much there is. It's like you pull a thread and then that thread just unravels into, you know, quite the conversation, and begins to really highlight a lot of issues. The thing that I guess I'm thinking about in relation to you know, who gets to be at the table in terms of policy making, and you know, how do we get ourselves listened to, and that sort of thing, is that I have a friend who does work on climate, and they go into communities and get kids primarily to take photos and tell stories about their communities and their environment. And you know, over time and as a collective, it can really illuminate what that looks like as a fuller story, right? It's different to hear just what I have to say than to hear what both of us have to say, right? And especially the more different we can see through those eyes, then the fuller the story is. But you know, this idea of class being linked to having money, and the people with money are the ones who are usually at the table, even if they're women, You know, they're usually educated women and not necessarily even the ones who, as you mentioned, Pranjali, concerned about how they're putting food on the table or whether or not their daughter's going to have to go to school or whether they're going to have to, you know, conjure up some dowry so that they can marry her off to the finest suitor, mm-hmm. you know, which in some ways, right, it's baffling that we still have this going on in some parts of the world, because we think that, you know, things should be so much different. But there are purely economic reasons in a lot of instances why these things continue to happen, right? And those economic reasons are directly linked to what we have access to mm-hmm. in terms of resources. And women have always, well, maybe not always, but, you know, in the last, you know, 500 to 1,000 years, we've had less access to the resources that we need, and, you know, are very good at conjuring up things from almost nothing.
No, yeah, for sure. I think also in terms of this idea of the state and the people who are making decision-making in itself, comes in with a lot of responsibility, and just having these people on the conversation table isn't enough. And when we talk about securitization of the environment, really the question arises, who are we protecting against from? Who are the people who are being protected? How are they being protected? What does it mean? Because protection and securitization is two different things. What does it mean to have the power to be given away in the hands of the state to make those decisions? Is an interesting conversation, I think, yeah.
For another day.
Mm-hmm, yes.
We're going to leave you with a song. Well, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the conversation, Pranjali. I'm going to leave you with a song from the Cranberries. This is a song called Time is Ticking Out and was written in response to Chernobyl way back when.